magic rivaled that of some of the top wizards. He spent hours in a comfy chair in the library reading grimoires. He researched answer formats and exam techniques. He listened to lectures until he could quote them by heart. He was generally considered by the staff to be the brightest and certainly the busiest student for decades. And at every finals, he carefully and competently got a mark of 84. It was uncanny. The Arch-Chancellor reached the last page. Eventually he said,
"Ah, I see. Feel sorry for the lad, do you?"
"I don't think you quite see what I mean," said the bursar.
"Fairly obvious to me," said the Arch-Chancellor. "Lad keeps coming within an ace of passing."
He pulled out one of the papers.
"Anyway, it says here he passed 3 years ago, got 91.
Yes, Arch-Chancellor, but he appealed."
"Appealed? Against passing?"
"He said he didn't think the examiners had noticed that he got the allotropes of Octeron wrong in question 6. He said he couldn't live with his conscience. He said it would haunt him for the rest of his days if he succeeded unfairly over better and more worthy students. You'll notice he got only 82 and 83 in the next 2 exams."
"Why is that?"
"We think he was playing safe, Master."
The Arch-Chancellor drummed his fingers on his desk.
"Can't have this," he said. "Can't have someone going around almost being a wizard and laughing at us up his... What's it that people laugh up?"
"My feelings exactly,"
purred the bursar.
"We should send him up," said the Arch-Chancellor firmly.
Down, Master," said the bursar. "Sending him up would mean making spiteful and satirical comments about him."
"Yes, good thinking. Let's do that," said the Arch-Chancellor.
"No, Master," said the bursar patiently. "He's sending us up. So we send him down."
"Right. Balance things up," said the Arch-Chancellor.
The bursar rolled his eyes.
"Or down," the Arch-Chancellor added. "So you want me to give him his marching orders, eh? Just send him along in the morning and..."
"No, Arch-Chancellor, we can't do it just like that."
"We can't? I thought we were in charge here."
"Yes, but you have to be extremely careful when dealing with Master Tuglebend. He's an expert on procedures. So what I thought we would do is give him this paper in the finals tomorrow."
The Arch-Chancellor took the proffered document. His lips moved silently as he read it.
"Just one question?"
"Yes. And he'll either pass or fail. I'd like to see him manage 84% on that."
In a sense which his tutors couldn't quite define, much to their annoyance, Victor Tuglebend was also the laziest person in the history of the world. Not simply ordinarily lazy. Ordinary laziness is merely the absence of effort. Victor had passed through there a long time ago, had gone straight through commonplace idleness, and out on the far side. He put more effort into avoiding work than most people put into hard labour. He had never wanted to be a wizard. He'd never wanted much, except perhaps to be left alone and not woken up until midday. When he'd been small, people had said things like, "And what do you want to be, little man?" And he'd said, "I dunno, what have you got?" They didn't let you get away with that sort of thing for very long. It wasn't enough to be what you were, you had to be working to be something else. He tried, for quite a long while he'd tried wanting to be a blacksmith, because that looked interesting and romantic. But it also involved hard work and intractable bits of metal. Then he'd tried wanting to be an assassin, which looked dashing and romantic. But it also involved hard work, and when you got right down to it, occasionally having to kill someone. Then he'd tried wanting to be an actor, which looked dramatic and romantic. But it had involved dusty tights, cramped lodgings, and to his amazement, hard work. He'd allowed himself to be sent to the university because it was easier than not going. He tended to smile a lot, in a faintly puzzled way. This gave people the impression that he was slightly more intelligent than they were. In fact, he was usually trying to work out what they had just said. And he had a thin moustache, which in a certain light made him look debonair, and in another made him look as though he had been drinking a thick chocolate milkshake. He was quite proud of it. When you became a wizard, you were expected to stop shaving and grow a beard like a gorse bush. Very senior wizards looked capable of straining nourishment out of the air via their moustaches, like whales. It was now 1:30. He was ambling back from the Mended Drum, the most determinably disreputable of the city's taverns. Victor Tugelbend always gave the impression of ambling, even when he was running. He was also quite sober, and a bit surprised, therefore, to find himself in the Plaza of Broken Moons. He'd been heading for the little alley behind the university and the piece of wall with the conveniently spaced removable bricks, where for hundreds and hundreds of years student wizards had quietly got around, or more precisely climbed over, unseen university's curfew restrictions. The plaza wasn't on the route. He turned to amble back the way he had come, and then stopped. There was something unusual going on. Usually there'd be a storyteller there, or some musicians, or an entrepreneur looking for prospective buyers of such surplus Ankh-Morpork landmarks as the Tower of Art or the Brass Bridge. Now there were just some people putting up a big screen, like a bedsheet stretched between two poles. He sauntered over to them. "What you doing?" he said amiably.
"There's going to be a performance."
"Oh, acting," said Victor without much interest.
End of CD 1.